This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of August 17th. I'm John Gibson, and on a steamy Sunday night with me on the internet is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
As long as the internet is streaming and not steaming, I'm good. How you doing, man?
Well, I'm cooking, but I'm fine. I'm fine with it. I don't mind the heat, so I take the heat over the cold any day of the week, so I'm fine.
Okay. I'll take it about 4 days a week.
Okay, what are you going to do with the other three?
Well, I'll be hot 3 days and cool 4 days. Okay. So, okay. Yeah, maybe this is, variety is the spice of something or other.
Something or other. We'll get some sauce on that too with you.
Okay.
All right. Again, frontline workers, essential workers worldwide. Thank you, and in Tokyo, where the heat is really on. And the people are battling. We know it's tough to hydrate in this situation when you're drinking tea, so don't do that. Drink water and get yourself some sodium. But the hospitals must be like war zones with the people who are toppling over because of dehydration as well. So especially the hospital workers, we thank you for the work. And let's not spread the Rona. Mask up. We got to fight. We got to fight, guys. All right, on this week's show, we've got a telephone chat with Alan Bucinets of Rock 10. We're going to talk about the Eagles. We're going to give our early CL and PL MVP candidates and talk about the top rookies. And Yasuhiro Ryan Ogawa throws a no-hitter. Boy, the bases are loaded. We got high heat, too. Let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, so on Friday, we were very fortunate to get Alan Bucinets on the line from MetLife Dome before practice, and it was really tight because basically the setup is the PR guy calls you and says, the interview is now, do it. And then when the PR guy says it's time is up, this is not like we got a thing going here. You know, we're going to keep going. It's like time's up. It was sort of like the Gong Show.
Big 70s reference.
It was not Chuck Woolery. It was somebody who actually believes in science. No, actually, it was a Chuck Barris who passed himself off as a secret agent. So, think that there's some still craziness, whichever way you want to call that. Sorry, Chucks. one of you is dead, so you won't be bugging me. Another one won't care, so you won't be bugging me neither. All right. So anyway, we had a chat, and it's the second time I've talked to Alan, and he's a very friendly, personable guy. But I made a memo to myself not to ask like one word answers. So I tried to keep everything open ended, and he did his, he was game, and he's very matter of fact. He's not one of the guys who likes, he's not real chatty. So sometimes it's hard to sort of get on something and roll. It'd be like, I'd be sort of into the question and he'd be going, I'm done. I'm going,
right.
Wait, I'm working. So anyway, but it was nice. And we really appreciate the time it took for him to get into it and take part.
Our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Alan Bucinets of the Rock 10 Eagles, second year pitcher. And thank you for joining us.
I'm glad to be here.
Oh, well, I'm sure you are. I mean, playing baseball was not a given anywhere in the world this year. And how has the COVID, first of all, how has the COVID-19 affected you in terms of you personally?
My parents and my wife's parents weren't able to come see us this year, which has been pretty tough. And little things like being able to go out to eat are very limited, if at all. So that's awful hard for us. Okay. You know, I enjoy some Japanese food, but not all of it. So every now and then I need some other food. So
Yeah. What do you do from your, especially your, I guess you're limited by how much you can go around when you're traveling. So, I mean,
Yeah, so we're traveling, you know, really not supposed to be out at all. I mean, other than just a convenience store, just a quick coffee, but we're not supposed to go sit down and eat, you know, it's too much risk. So.
Yeah. I mean, before you could go, you know, there's always places for comfort food, but I guess that's a no-no now.
Yeah, exactly. So that's been pretty tough for me and the family, and we're working through it.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that. And now, one of the things, obviously, that's different is now that you've been, this is your second year, and you've experienced the full-on Asian noisy ball games, and then the no crowds, and now the muted crowds. Now, how has that affected the play?
I guess you could definitely say there's a lot less adrenaline. I mean, I don't know. At this point, it's become normal, I guess. So it's just, I probably have to get used to the crowds being loud again. So, yeah, I look forward to that, though.
Yeah, how was that adjustment when you first arrived? Because it everybody, you know, has a different experience with it.
It took a little while, but, I mean, you eventually get used to it. You have to, or, you know, it's hard to be successful. So.
Indeed. Now, the first thing that's a big change, obviously, other than the place in the standings, where the Eagles are doing very well this year, one big change, you have a new manager, and you have your closer, Yuki Matsui, is now in the starting rotation. So what's going on in the bullpen since... you know, with things moving around since Matsui left?
I mean, we've got a bunch of good arms in the bullpen, so, I mean, you know, we're kind of working around it. Obviously, Matsui in the bullpen is fantastic, but he's a young guy, and he can be a legitimate starter, so, I mean, the team needs him there, and you know, I mean, it'll be good for him as well, so those things with the rest of the bullpen, we can pick it up, and I mean, we love Matsui. We'd love to have him in the bullpen, but obviously he's a fantastic starter. So that's just one of those things that everybody will have to work around, and I think everybody's, you know, well-suited to be able to fill that in. So
now you've been asked to close a lot recently, and that's gone pretty well. When was the last time you've done that?
I mean, I closed games in the minor leagues in the States, but, I don't even know. I didn't tell you the last time it happened, but it's been pretty fun. I've enjoyed the experience so far.
Excellent. Now, one of the things that I've noticed is that you've given up only, you know, you gave up one home run last June. You haven't given up a home run in over a year.
And, well, I mean, I hope you don't jinx anything.
No, but, I'm not here to jinx you. I'm here to keep you on your
seat. I mean, we're in
this
tight ballpark. Come on.
I know, it's amazing. And Shogo Nakamura was the one guy. But is that normal for you to not give up a lot of home runs?
Well, I'd like to think so. So, I mean, I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. I'm just...
Well, don't think about it. Don't start.
I'm just trying to get the next guy out. Is all I'm doing. You know, the guy in the box out. That's really all I'm thinking about at any given time.
Okay. Have you changed your pitches any since you came to Japan?
No, they're all the same from last year. I mean, this fastball, curve, cutter, change. So, you know, hopefully we can get them all working. Sometimes one's not working, but that's how it goes.
Because I see you've been throwing the cutter less and the curveball and fastball more, and so far was there any thinking behind that?
It's just sometimes it's not cutting, so I use pitches that are working the most at the time. So I mean, hopefully that comes back, and we'll hopefully fool hitters a little more.
Now I have to ask, because it's not. I mean, it might be normal in Japan to see relievers with four or five good pitches, but it's less so in America.
I'd say maybe less. I mean, to say I have four pitches is probably a stretch. I probably only use two, maybe three in any given outing. So I wouldn't call it four. It's just hopefully when I pitch, I have two or three, maybe. So,
have you thought that you might be better suited to be a starter ever?
I've tried that before, and it was a bad experiment. So
okay.
I think I'll stay away from it.
Okay. All right. Now, when you came here, obviously I don't know, my experience, everybody, you know, the things change as time goes on, and I'm sure I've seen how the starting pitchers have managed in Japan has changed over the years, but the bullpens have also changed quite a bit. Now, was there any kind of adjustment or anything you had to get used to when you started working out of a Japanese bullpen in the terms of what people were doing around you or what you were asked to do?
Oh, no, not really. I mean, it's the same idea. You're trying to get through your one inning or two innings, doesn't matter what inning it is, and everybody has their own routines, eight in the States that we're here, so...
Mm-hmm.
Everybody kind of does their own warm-up and gets loose and then just go out there and hope for the best.
Now, do you have teammates who are playing, you know, throwing pretty hard early in the game, warming up, you know, maybe sixth, seventh inning guys who are playing catch in the third and fourth innings?
Not in the third and fourth innings. I mean, everybody kind of plays catch, but I don't know how aggressive they're being. They're just kind of staying loose, so...
Okay, it used to be the reason I ask is because it used to be a thing in Japan that pretty much everybody aired it out every day in the bullpen. It was the Japanese style.
And, yeah, I mean, I think they throw a little more than in the States, but I mean, I think that's just a different routine for them. Some guys in the States put weighted balls and stuff pretty hard, so it's just each their own, I guess.
I suppose. Now, okay. I think we're running out. We've just been told we're running out of time, so I want to thank you for joining us, and hopefully we'll get to see you in person before too long.
Yeah, I hope so. I'd love to be able to talk to somebody in person and go out and get to meet sometime. So I appreciate you having me.
Oh no, it was a great to have you on. Thanks so much, and good luck, and you know, just keep going forward one guy at a time, I suppose.
That's the plan. I appreciate it.
Okay, take care, man.
All right, bye-bye.
Yep.
All right. Well, Alan, it was good to have you on the show. When we were talking, we spoke last year, and I thought it was off for the show, and it wasn't, as I've been corrected. But you know, I've been wrong before. So anyway, thank you for joining us, and look forward to seeing you in person. Okay, so John.
Yeah, you know, he has not been on the show before, so this was his debut on JBW, but I talked to him for, I don't know, about 15 minutes
mm-hmm.
out at MetLife. I've been calling this place Cebu MetLife Dome just so people know what team that the stadium belongs with in terms of association, but it is officially only MetLife Dome, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not Cebu MetLife Dome, but... And then we talked for about 15 minutes out there one day, and I think he had just gotten to the team and come up to the first team and everything. So that was last year. And I have to say, you both sounded like you were kind of floundering in unfamiliar territory. You seemed a little bit in having some verbal turbulence or...
Oh, yeah, it was
Yeah,
it was
you were
difficult.
Verbally groping through the interview because I thought, you know, I didn't know that you had met him before. I thought this was your first chat, but you had actually met him last year, so that was good. But it seemed kind of and you know, we do have the PR guys sitting there hovering, sort of. We can't see them, but we know they're there.
Well, that's not really an issue as much as I just was, you know, I had the same difficulty maybe sometimes that I have with Zealous Wheeler, is that he's got it's almost like we're on different agendas. You know, he's got things and he's trying to explain them, and I've got things I'm trying to ask, and for some reason we're just not in sync. And we were on a couple of questions, but largely not. So,
yeah, so I totally understand it. It was, you know, it just seemed that way, and it seemed like this was new for him as well. He hadn't done one of these interviews where he can't see the interviewer, and it was just kind of floundering, but it was okay because we got some good stuff out of there. And mm-hmm. what I want to focus in on, well, not focus in on, but point out is I know Yuki Matsui was a good closer. He was an excellent closer, but his numbers don't say that he's a fantastic starter. And we've got Alan, and I know it's his teammate, and you're contractually obligated to say nice things about your teammates, but no, he hasn't been a fantastic starter. He's been, the numbers say he's been
bad,
you know, less than mediocre. Yeah.
The results have been bad.
The results.
But obviously the team thinks that, you know, expects more, and I'm sure his teammates expect more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, basically on the quality of his pitches, you know, I mean, that was the first question that he answered. You know, we've got a lot of good arms.
Mm-hmm.
So he's, you know, I take that as I was listening to it again, I take that to mean, you know, we're basically focused on what people can do and not what the exact numbers are.
Right.
So in that respect, it makes sense. But yes, I mean, no one's going to think that he's an established starter when he failed as a starter the first time, and he's not, he hasn't turned the corner as a starter yet.
Not yet, yeah. And I'm willing to give him some more time. He's changing motions, he's changing delivery, he's transitioning. So it's not supposed to be easy, and I didn't expect it to be easy. But I'm not throwing him out.
Oh, that's good. I'm sure that'll make, you know, he's a very personable young man. And one day last year when I was talking to the Eagles, I think it was at Tokyo Dome against the Fighters when I was walking past him, and he walked past me and said, hi.
Yeah. He seems like a friendly guy, and I haven't talked to him, but you know, those things, the results are the results, and I wouldn't say fantastic. So that was first up. And you know, I asked the question, or I put in the question about the bullpen and its situation, because I think Alan came into this season. We never heard where he was supposed to be other than a setup man. And we didn't hear whether that was seventh inning guy or eighth inning guy. They had also brought in Kazuhisa Makita, so I don't really know what his original role was supposed to be coming in, and now he's closing. So there just really has been a lot of flux, a lot of change in that bullpen, including something that we didn't get to talk about when we had Stefan Romero on the show, and I wanted to talk about the fact that Kohei Morihara, the guy who started the season as a closer and had started out really strong and looked really good, and I complimented him on that. And then he ran into some problems. They blew a couple big leads, and he was part of that. And then he stopped getting guys out 1-2-3, and then he couldn't get out of innings. And he found himself back down on the farm. And he was part of the bullpen blowups that made me want to discuss the bullpen blowups. So he has gone, and Alan is at the back of the bullpen, and that's a lot of change. That's a huge change from what I think the team entered the season. Now, obviously, they're in second place. They're really competing well. The offense is really strong. We'll get into the team a little bit later, but I asked that question, or I wanted that question posed, just to see what the roles were supposed to be, because, you know, I'm big on roles, and I wanted to see if Alan was going to say, yeah, I didn't, you know, I wasn't sure my role was going to be coming in. But we learned that he had closed before in the minor leagues.
Yeah. And he enjoys it.
And he has been really solid at the back. And I know I hate using that word, but I don't want to say he's fantastic, but he's getting the job done. That's more than we can say for some teams. They're having trouble even with one run leads. And so he's getting the job done. He looks good at the back of the bullpen. So
you want to say even with three run leads?
No, the one run lead is, you know, it's
the one run lead is dicey,
lead, man.
Three runs.
Yeah, but it's a lead.
Well, then even
you're supposed to get, look, you talk to these guys, they say, hey, my job is to get guys out.
Right.
and not give up runs. Well, that's part of
it. Well, one run leads get blown a lot. That's why.
Yeah, well, they are, certainly normal. Are this year. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
That's normal. I mean, everyone does it.
Well, sure. Everybody does it on occasion, but I think I would venture to say that this season we've seen a lot of a lot of trouble in bullpens. Now, I'm not saying that one run or two run leads are not safe at all, but I think we've just seen a lot of trouble from bullpens throughout the league, and we discussed it on that show,
and we talked
about the fact that the Dragons had the best closer and the best maybe setup guy in terms of what their results were. They just couldn't get him the ball, and recently they've been getting him the ball, and they won three series in a row. So yeah, I understand that they're going to be giving up runs, and that one run leads are not safe. But it just seems that we just don't have real high quality closer. I'm not talking about the fact that runs, you know, a one run lead is blah blah blah. I'm just saying, look around the league, and the closers are on almost every team giving up runs regularly, and that's not something we are used to.
All I can say is I don't know what we're used to.
Okay,
because I don't have the numbers, so I can't sort of like you know. It's sort of like. People are driving fast, you know, on the freeway. And I'll say, sure. Yeah, it seems like they're driving faster than usual. I said, but if I don't know the actual speeds, it's kind of hard to get an idea of, are we talking about, you know, mountains or molehills? I don't really have a conception of that.
Okay.
So I just have to take your word for it that your perception is that it's quite a bit more than usual, or a bit more than usual, or somewhere, some adjective you want to use in there.
Something, yeah. And then the other thing he said was about you bringing up the fact that he hadn't given up any home runs, and then saying, don't jinx it. And I just had to chuckle. I've had this conversation with Michael Westbay. I'm like, if reporters and announcers could have any impact on a field or playing surface of any kind, then I would be the king of jinxes, because I talk about no hitters. It's we'll get to this later as well, because we had the Ryan Ogawa no-no that went out, that happened on Saturday. And I'm like, you know, if I could jinx guys with just saying something, boy, you know, my teams would win every game, you know, in a shutout.
Well, speaking of that,
basketball teams included.
the two of the last three no hitters that I was paying careful attention to in the late innings, I was certain that they weren't going to be no hitters. It's like, I just like, there's no way it's going to come out as a no hitter, because it's just not flowing that way. And I was wrong both times. So.
Yeah. I'll talk to you, Alan, when I see you next time. But nothing we can do to, you know, interrupt or interfere with your good or bad out there. And that's why, you know, a long time ago, I thought I might offer a player some advice, and I stopped myself then, and I never even tried. And that's the only way we could probably impact what's going on the field, is to try to give somebody some advice. But other than that, just mentioning the fact that they hadn't done anything or something, I thought it was cute, and I'm sure he wasn't serious. I thought it was a good talking point. So,
well, I was surprised. You know, I usually look at the pitchers, you know, their numbers, the shape of their performances.
Sure.
And I hadn't noticed a lot. I guess the big thing I noticed with him was the pitch selection was interesting. And that was, of course, the answer is, so was there a plan not to use the cutter? No, it's not cutting.
Right.
Okay. Sharpen that puppy, you know. I don't know what.
Sharpen that puppy.
but yeah, and the other one that I liked was because it actually, you know, he said it's not working and it hasn't been effective this year, and I got that. But his other pitches have been, you know, his changeup's been, he doesn't use it a lot, but it has been effective when he does. So I guess maybe that's his thing, is he's good. His superpower is the ability to recognize the pitches that he should leave in the bullpen.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, you know, all the pitchers always tell us that this is not working on this particular day. And okay.
Sure. And we can see it. I mean, we can see it in games, and we can see it when guys are kind of different pitchers than they normally are. You know, something, they're doing something particularly well with having, I saw it today in a game, and I thought, wow, this is not quite normal for this guy. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was interesting. And of course, the other one that really intrigued me, and we didn't talk about it a lot, but we did a little. And as John knows, I basically cook, with the exception of my wife's ubiquitous miso soup, which we always have here. Our meals consist of more or less the same things every day. I've become my dad. Basically, you know, we've got the vegetable dish, the bean dish, the rice, the fish, the chicken, the broccoli, and that's what I eat 7 days a week. And
good.
And it's the same stuff, basically. And I cook it all at home. And so for me, the whole thing about COVID-19 and not being able to go out to eat is like, mm-hmm. yeah. And what's the problem?
Yeah. So, I don't get what you mean. But
for the players who have to travel,
mm-hmm.
it's gotta be tough.
Yeah.
And that had never occurred to me. You know, why is it hard? It's hard because these guys need to go out to get the comfort food. I mean, especially if they haven't lived in Japan half their lives, like some poor souls.
No, I didn't think that was a big deal. I mean, I know we talked about food with Carter Stewart Jr. when we did that interview, but I thought it was more of a camaraderie thing, not a food as a necessity thing. Because I mean, if you really needed something, you just hit up a convenience store and grab something to some
yeah,
sustenance.
Yeah, but
and
still,
get something. But
yeah, convenience store. What I was thinking is the teams ought to have, you know, if you've got a travel, the team manager, they actually have a person who's known as the manager, who is more like the traveling secretary.
Okay.
And he's going to be he's the guy who should be sort of like finding out in every city, you know, which restaurants do we need to have deliver and which restaurants do we need to send somebody out to, you know, get Uber Eats or something so our guys can get
right.
food at the hotel that they need to be comfortable.
True.
I wonder,
true.
You know, if it's, you know, you can't, if you've got a guy who's not fond of Japanese convenience store food or
that's
the
me.
Hotel food.
That's me.
I mean, how are they going to manage on the road? I feel I know Adam Jones likes his Kobe beef because he talks about it on his podcast all the time. And,
right.
And but if you're on the road and you can't go out and you can't get it, what do you do? And I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, it is a challenge. You know, I'm not a ball player, so I don't have to worry about getting X number of calories and playing in the heat and all that stuff. So
right,
I can survive on, you know, nuts and berries, but I don't think these guys do that, obviously.
No,
so,
it's,
yeah.
it's hard. I mean, if you've been with ball players eating, it's a... It makes Animal House look like kind of a, you know, a kind of a, I don't know, what's the word? It's sort of understated.
Rumper room.
It's understated. It's like another meat course. Oh, make it three. This guy's just started his, you know, second. He might need two more.
Right. All right. Well, let's transition to talking about the Eagles. And I tweeted something out about it this past week, but I think it's true. Kazuhisa Ishii, the front office exec of the year, with deals to acquire Hideaki Wakui and Stefan Romero and Daichi Suzuki, among others, in this offseason. And look at this team. All those three guys in particular are having outstanding performances. The team is in the running for the playoffs. Ishii got Hideto Asamura from the Lions the previous year. So we joked about him. I think it was in the prediction show about how he was getting all the former teammates and then mm-hmm. how he went to get guys at the Chiba Lotte Marines with the trades and everything. But you know, the team is really performing. So I don't think we can laugh about it. I think, obviously, we don't have that award here in Japan, Exec of the Year.
Yeah, and so, and we laugh because he has cultivated an image of being a doofus, and I mean he's really polished this image, how much it's playing to a you know sort of the media character. He's become a media caricature. Of this guy who does just really oddball stuff and who doesn't really care all the time as a player. And that was his image. And you just don't, it's really hard to separate that or to wonder, you have to ask the question, is that really him or not? I don't know if it is him or not. I don't know if he's actually the one who's doing this or he's a figurehead or what. I don't know, but whatever it is working.
Yeah, we talked about what we thought was going to be the in the prediction show, what we thought was going to be the rotation, and that included Takahiro Norimoto, the ace, and then Takayuki Kishi, and those guys between them, I think, have... If Kishi has won a game, I can't remember if he has or not. I think he has. So let's say four games. I'm looking it up as we speak, but
Norimoto's
that's not a lot.
3-3, yeah.
3-3 for Norimoto. And he just doesn't look like himself. I don't know if there's something going on, but velocity-wise, I looked at some of his pitches the other day against the Lions, and he has mastered the float ball is what I like to call it, because he's throwing a fastball that just doesn't do anything. It's not fast. It's not
that
moving.
The thing I have that has concerned me is that it's not so much the velocity of his pitches as they are not moving.
Yeah, they're just sitting there, and he's not locating them, so they're sitting there middle. A lot of the pitches that got whacked were sitting in the middle of the plate, and they weren't going that fast anyway. So, yeah, I don't know how he got through the innings that he got through, to be honest.
The thing that he does well is he goes after guys. He will attack guys. So, it's sort of a damage control thing. Not everybody's going to make, hit all the mistakes. He's never afraid. He's never been afraid of going of throwing all his pitches in the strike zone, so he can get away with a lot of stuff that other guys can't do.
Yeah, but Kishi does have one victory, so that's four between the two of them. So,
with Norimoto, what I have noticed is that his splitter has been, and I'm not the guy to know. I might have actually mentioned this on another show. It seems like a lot of the time it's not been tumbling. It's just been sort of lazy.
Floating. It's a float ball.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen him throw a few good ones, but it's like his former consultant with the Eagles told me that one year his splitter wasn't working, and it was not the velocity issue, but it was not the spin. He was the splitter. You want it to have as little spin as possible, so it drops more. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't the issue, but the issue was the direction, was the axis of the spin. It wasn't the same as usual, and so it was staying up because it wasn't spinning the way it was supposed to spin on the same angle. So that's to me, that's what I'm looking at, and it looks like when I watch it in slow motion is that the angle is not good, and it's keeping the ball up. So, but that's just my uneducated view. But I'll tell you, when you see guys, and that's probably the biggest thing I notice is that when people are spinning the ball well, you can see an obvious difference in the quality of their pitches.
Yeah. And his ERA is a career worst at just under four. His walk rate is a career worst at the moment. His OPS against is high. His whip is 1.35. That would be a career worst if he finishes that. He's just different. Mm-hmm. So that, given that, and the fact that Kishi hasn't won but one game, you got yeah, I was sitting around thinking, he's 7-0. Tomoyuki Sugano, the Giants ace, is also 7-0. Which one of those guys is more likely to lose a game first? And I automatically you want to say Wakui, but I don't think so with that offense. I think Sugano is more likely to lose a game first, but he's probably the better pitcher too. So
yeah, I think so. I mean, and I think you know, after his first two games, which were truly mediocre, that since his, and I don't remember the third. I don't know if it was his third start that was quality. I mean, like, looked really good, or the fourth start. But basically, since that third or fourth game, he's just been really good. I mean, his last outing, he had some pitches that he wasn't executing. It's like he had a nice lead and he was just sort of like cruising. Mm-hmm. And I think he looked like he lost his concentration a little bit. It's like, okay, I'm just going to locate this pitch and bam-o, bam-o, bam-o. And that stuff happens. But other than that, he's just been, when he's been focusing on what he needs to do, he's been really, really good. I don't think he's been this good as in his entire career.
Yeah, it's. I don't know. Well, I can't say wins, losses. We know he hasn't, but stuff wise, I think maybe.
I think he was
when he was young. I don't remember because we didn't get to watch the games like we do now.
Okay. I saw him pitch a lot, and he was, he was just so inconsistent. He had just a dynamite slider, but he didn't really know what he was doing. He had a dynamite slider, but his fastball was always straight. And mm-hmm. It was always a case of, if he had enough spin on it and if the slider was working and he didn't, do dumb stuff, he could be really, really good. But now it's like he knows what he's doing and his stuff. I think actually his fastball is better now. It's not as fast as it was 15 years ago, but it's better.
Well, I can't remember that stuff 15, 16 years ago, but I know he's in a great position.
I can't remember most things that are 15 days ago, so we're kind of in the same boat.
Yeah. And then you look at the rotation. So you've got, we talked about Kishi, we talked about Norimoto, but I think when Romero was on, I mentioned Takahiro Shiomi, who's mm-hmm. looking like he was in his rookie season, but he's only 3-3. You've got Hayato Yuge. Mm-hmm. He's 3-1. And after that, there's just, that back half of that rotation. And, they've tried a few guys. They even brought up Yuya Fukui, who threw today. He hasn't really won a game for them. He keeps them in game. I mean, he's basically a five and dive guy if he can make it five innings. And, he had a bad inning tonight, and the Lions jumped all over that, and that was the end of that game, basically. But the bullpen is, since they sent Morihara down and they reconfigured the bullpen, that has been better, and they look good. And they won a series at Fukuoka. They I think split the series with Lotte next, and then they went to the Cebu Lions and they won three. They lost two and they tied a game out there, so they actually won that six-game series. So they're looking good in terms of beating the teams they need to beat, beating the top-end teams, and then you've got the Buffaloes in there, so they could lose all six to the Eagles at any time. We never know, although the Buffaloes gave them a tough time up there in Sendai when they played them up there last time. So
I think the Eagles, I think, have I think it's kind of a new look for them is that they've executed. I mean, it's like they've – sure, people have off days and such, but the execution has been really good by the players, by the hitters.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get to next was the hitting. Yeah, and they lead Japan, so they lead NPB in doubles. They lead in OPS, team OPS. That's over 800. They lead with hitting with runners in scoring position. They've got 136 hits with runners in scoring position. That's all leads Japan. So they're also, they Lead Japan, and our buddy, or my buddy, I should say, Aozora on Twitter, tweeted out on the 13th of August. He tweeted out teams that have won the most games when leading after five innings. And Rakuten leads in that category, at least through August 13th, they did, with 11 of those. So the next closest team was the Giants at 8, and the Giants lost the series to the Dragons. So I tweeted out today that the rest of the Central League thanks you, Junichi, because everybody's trying to catch the Giants. So when the last place team beats the first place team, it's always helpful for the guys, you know,
the people who aren't in last place.
Exactly. So you know, we got Egoro Mogi, we got Daichi Suzuki, Romero, Akihiro Shimouchi. They're all in the top five in batting in the Pacific League. Can you believe that? I mean, I've never really seen five guys like that dominant. I've seen five guys maybe up in there with maybe not five. I'm sorry, I just haven't seen this. Yeah, not in batting.
No, they've had, and the other thing they've had is a center fielder. I mean, they've had this sort of off and on thing with their center fielders for a couple of years, and it was Kazuki Tanaka, and then it was Tatsumi. And it's like, okay, well, Tatsumi's the one who's healthy now, so it actually looks like, I don't know, maybe it's the COVID-19 that they're giving him, you know, both chances. But I mean, the quality of play that they're getting from Stefan Romero, both at the plate and in the outfield, right now that Jabari Blush is down with an injury, so other guys are going to get more playing time. But yeah, I think that settling that outfield situation has been really big for them. And of course, Hiroaki Shimouchi is a favorite of mine. I mean, there's just so much talent on that team that it used to be like Genji Akaminai and a bunch of guys whose names you'd forget next week. And I say that because Shimouchi was there and a bunch of these guys were there, but you just didn't remember. But now it's like the Pacific League All-Star, you know, basically who do you need to make a Pacific League All-Star team? You need, Yamakawa and Yanagita and Masataka Yoshida and the Rakuten Eagles.
Yeah. Excellent way to put it. Yeah. And, I don't want to leave out, Hikaru Ota, the catcher.
No.
Him out to me, and I'm like, wow, you know, this guy he's a catcher first, but I saw him hit a home run, I think it was against the Lions this past week, on a pitch that wasn't really a pitch that maybe you would see a guy hit out to center. You might see him pull it or maybe go the other way with it, and he rocketed this thing to center field, and I'm like, whoa.
Well, I think you'd call it beyond center field.
Yeah, because it was a home run, so yeah. Beyond center field. So, yeah, they've done a really good job putting this team together. And if they can play the defense that's necessary, that's be maybe their only Achilles heel. They're not great defensively around the diamond and around the outfield, but they're good enough. And I think, you know, they can really challenge at least to get into the playoffs, maybe challenge to win the pennant, and then certainly challenge whoever they come across or come up against in the playoffs. It's going to be a fun watch if they can make it. They're going to have to hold off the Marines. I think the Marines still have another run.
Sure, but I think they're just really well prepared. And I have to give some credit to Hajime Miki, the first year manager, because I know, you know, Stefan Romero said, well, you know, the manager did this and the manager, but you know, saying the manager wants us not to make mistakes is like saying the homeowner says, you know, don't screw up the paint job.
Right. Yeah. Don't crash your car into the garage.
Exactly. You expect that stuff. But when you see, you know, you got to look and see what the results are. And I see a team that's really well prepared.
Okay. All right. Making a four-seam transition, we had a no-hitter in MPV on Saturday. As I mentioned earlier, Yakult Yasuhiro Ryan Ogawa fired the 93rd no-hitter in MPV history. He's the 82nd pitcher to accomplish the feat. They beat DeNA 9-0. And for me, I thought the most interesting part, I didn't really, there are a couple of things, a couple of aspects about this game. So a lot of you guys who follow us on Twitter know that a friend of the show, Coaster Freak, really has been, teasing slash tormenting me about no hitters. And after three innings, if a guy has not allowed a hit, he usually tweets it out. And I think part of it was, he can correct me. It started when he wanted, he's a Lions fan. The Lions were being no hit. And I think he was trying to jinx it. And I said, I mentioned it, or it might have been the other way around. I tweeted out that a guy had gone, five innings without allowing a hit, and he told me don't jinx it. And I said, son, if I could, if I had that power, I wouldn't waste it on the Lions, and I wouldn't be here. I'd be in Vegas making money. So that started where now Coaster Freak, after I think the earliest is about two innings, maybe three innings, he tweets out so-and-so has a no-hitter. So he tweets out no-hitter alert. So I think he did that. He didn't actually do this early on, but he did alert me about it. I think it was the fifth inning. And I'm like, oh, geez, I had been flipping the channels. Maybe I should go back and watch. So I started watching after the fifth inning. So I missed the early stuff with Ogawa. So I didn't really, I couldn't compare and talk about anything early on in the game. But I'm calling this the 29 out no-no. And the reason is because the breakdown goes like this. He had 10 strikeouts, and he had six of those over the final four innings. He had seven ground outs, but there was an error. And I think I tweeted E6, but it was an E4.
Correct.
And it was in the eighth inning. And then he had seven flyouts, but there was another out that should have been that they called an E9. So he missed out on that. And he had two lineouts and a pop out. So, and he walked three. So it's a 29 with the two errors. He pitched around all that stuff and still got it. And it's just a fantastic, from what I saw, on nobody really squared up a ball. Nobody hit anything very hard.
Well, the error in right field, that was hit well. I mean, that was on a line, and it was basically, if he had had to move 10 feet, he wouldn't have gotten it, but
yeah. And like I said, that's what I said. I didn't see, the last four innings.
That was in the second inning. Okay. I don't know why I happened to be watching that, but I was. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is, it was fun. It was fun to watch. And he's a good pitcher. He was a rookie of the year in 2013 and really came on like gangbusters. And everybody said, oh, now they've, the Swallows have their ace pitcher, and they're going to work around him and build a rotation around him, and he just hasn't been that guy. He's experienced a few injuries. He's had to work through some things. People got used to, early on, I think it was his rookie season, people said, it's really hard for the batters to pick up the ball. But I think people adjusted, or batters adjusted, to his delivery, and they've gotten used to it. But that was just, the best hitting lineup in the Central League, and he no hits them, and a 29 out no hitter on top of that. So take that.
Well, here's the thing about Japan, and I guess a lot of people know this, but if there had been like a two base error in the ninth inning,
mm-hmm.
Before, when there were two guys on and no outs, and one of those runs scored, he would not have had in Japan a no hitter. Even though he allowed no hits.
And why is that?
Because in Japan, you are required to also pitch a shutout.
Oh, yes. It has to be no hit, no run.
That's right. In fact, there was a no hitter in Japan that isn't listed because it wasn't a shutout.
Can you believe that?
Can you believe that? Well, we used to have no hitters in America where the guys lost.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But I think Bud Selig said, no, we're not going to allow losers to have no hitters.
Yeah. So did you see the interview after the game with Ogawa?
I did.
And, I'd like to say this about him, because I don't know. Have you ever spoke to him?
No.
I have not either, but I've heard him when I was doing interviews with Coco or some of the other players there. And he's just a real soft-spoken guy with the media.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a killer. And he's really focused, and he's really strong, personality-wise. And when he's talking to his, I just happened to be around I think it was some, I was talking to Coco, I think it was a couple of years ago, and I just happened to be around, and I heard him talking to the other pitchers. Man, he's fierce with the teammates, so he's not that soft-spoken guy you see. Even after this no-hitter in the heat, in the searing heat, if you want to say that, because it was pretty warm on Saturday, and he was very kind with the media and soft-spoken, but I'm like, you know, I know who you really are, man. You're a killer. you don't fool me anymore.
Well, he fooled me because it was a really tough no hitter. So I was thinking when that eighth inning happened, I was thinking along with a lot of people that boy, that it's gone because he should have burned up his pitch count because of the error and the walk. I mean, what was it? A 10 pitch walk to open the inning, the eighth inning. Whoa. Okay. So that was bad. And then there's an error. I think it was on the next play. And it was, this is one of the stupid baseball rules. They don't penalize the shortstop. And when I originally did the first story, I didn't count it as an error because I'm thinking, hold on a second. It doesn't show up in the Japanese box scores as an error because it's the shortstop didn't fielded it, and it was recorded as a grounder to short. But because the shortstop gets an assist on that, even though there's no out made, because the second baseman dropped the ball, so I mistook that, and there were two, and as you said, two errors. But I didn't think he was going to do it. And here's one of the reasons I didn't think he was doing it. A, it's really hard to begin with. It's really, really hard. It helps if you're a big strikeout pitcher like Kodai Senga. And you're really, really strong. Although I think he is really, really strong. He's not a big strikeout pitcher. In fact, he was the third pitcher in the fourth pitcher in NPB history to throw his first, he struck out 10 batters, and it was the first time in his career he had ever struck out 10 batters in a game.
Oh, he'd never had 10 strikeouts before?
That is correct.
That I didn't hear.
So I'm thinking, this is,
I can't believe he hasn't had the double-digit strikeouts
before. I know, isn't that amazing? Because he's such a good pitcher. And then the other thing is, okay, so there were four other guys, and I don't remember the first one. It doesn't come to mind. I think it was in the 60s. But the other two I do remember. One was by Yukio Tanaka, of the Fighters in the 80s. They had two Yukio Tanakas, and he was like a really young pitcher. Mm-hmm. The reason he hadn't struck out 10 guys is because he just started playing. And the other one was by a Dragons pitcher who I think it was his first or second game in NPB. And he threw a no-hitter. And so it wasn't like a surprise that he had not had 10 strikeouts before, but here you've got a rookie of the year who's in his, you know, is in his seventh or his eighth pro season, and he hasn't had 10 strikeouts. It just, everything went against the grain. So Yudai Ohno, who threw the no-hitter last September, the previous one, said, you know, nobody throws a no-hitter like that. I mean, who throws a no-hitter when there's an error, you know, your fielder makes an error and there's two guys on with no outs in the eighth inning and you're, you know, and he said, for me as a pitcher, that's just amazing. It's inspiring. Of course, I love Yudai Ohno almost as much for his quotes as for his pitches.
Yeah. Yeah. He has completed three consecutive games, starting with the Yakult Swallows. He threw a complete game against them when it looked like he was going to get knocked out early, and then the Giants two games in a row. So,
And 10 strikeouts in every game. How about that, Yasuhiro Ogawa?
Yeah, take that, buddy. All right, let's make a two-seam transition and talk about our early MVP candidates. So it's about, let's see, we've passed a third of the way through the season, right? So we're in a really weird, murky kind of area. So I don't know how to categorize.
I'll just kind of throw out some people's name as potential.
Right, potential but ones. Yeah, we've got some guys who are putting up some really strong performances in the Central League. That's really going to be a race. So let's start in the Pacific League where there's just not that much. Well, there is a lot to talk about, but not as much.
That's all about one guy.
Yeah, and that's Yuki Yanagita, one of my favorite players in MPV, and he's putting up ridiculous numbers. He's hitting crazy home runs on crazy, stupid swings on unhittable pitches, and he's doing it to win games. And, you know, he had an at-bat the other day where he got four off-speed pitches and one fastball from Sachiya Yamasaki, and he hits that one over the fence for a home run, and that wins the game. So, man, what a player. What a guy.
Yeah, I had to, you know, I mentioned those two ones. Well, I think the one that, yeah, the one was the unhittable swing was the one where he was completely fooled and trying to hold up on a I think it was a slider away, and his helmet flew off when he stopped.
Right,
and he hit it one handed and he hit a home run. I mean, okay, he hit it into the home run terrace. Okay, but still, so that was pretty amazing. That was, you know, it was a very hittable pitch, but he was fooled. You know, so he shouldn't have been able to hit it. And then the other one was I'll say this about every pitch, just like every year and every date and everything you ever do, it could always be better. It right. could have been a better fastball, but it was plenty good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And four pitches away, you know what I'm not buying in that whole story? He'd been going away, away, away. And I expected him to go outside. You know what? I talked about this a little today on Twitter, but I think this was one of those cases where that was the pitch he was expecting, because he wasn't leaning out. He was leaning back looking for an inside fastball. And
this is the one from Yamasaki, right?
Pardon? Yamasaki, yes. Yes, yeah, one on Saturday. That he broke open the 1-1 pitcher's duel with that just amazing home run, a good pitch inside, and he just crushed it like it was batting practice. Like throw it to me right here, and it made me think, because I've just noticed this a little bit, and I don't know why it had never occurred to me, but and I tweeted about it today. But is these Japanese teams, and I've talked about this, they love to work on predicting pitches. They've been doing this for years and years and years. Sure, you know, yeah. The chart in this situation, this is the pitch he's going to throw you. This is the pitch. And I think that a lot of the Japanese players get so hooked into this that when the guys change, they're useless.
Oh, yeah. I've said that for years, that they're always looking up at the at the big board to see the replay, because they're like, why did he throw me that? You know,
yeah.
They're always making a scrunchy face and looking at the
big board. So I think that when you see something like the home run we saw by Tatsuya Yamaashi the other day at SoftBank, the Oryx leadoff hitter hit, I think it was the first pitch of the game. I think he was looking oh my, it wasn't him. It was somebody hit a pitch. Anyway, there was a fellow hit a pitch. It was a low curveball. It was just below the knees. And I'm going, and I think the guy was behind 2-0, and he threw this curveball, and he must have been looking for it, because he was setting up to tee that thing, and he uppercutted it, like, just put it on a plate. And I thought he looked like he knew it was coming. And all I could think of was that was the pitch he was looking for from the start.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think that's what you see sometimes when you see these guys who have really no business hitting these pitches for home runs. They should be, they're good pitches, but it's the one they're looking for.
Yeah. So I would say Yanagita's the front runner. He's hitting .377 to lead the PL. He has 15 home runs. That's second in the PL, and he has 38 RBIs. That's kind of down the list from the leader, but he's fifth in the PL on those. In those big categories, which are the categories that the Japanese press are in love with.
Yep, it's batting at, you know, the Triple Crown stuff, basically, and two out of three, bingo.
But he also leads the PL in OPS with 1,230 OPS. So, I mean...
yeah, he's back. I mean, he was hurt last year. He was hurt last year, so he couldn't lead the league in slugging average and on base percentage for the fifth straight season. But
yeah,
I'm guessing this will be the fifth out of six.
Yeah, there we go. So the other guys, obviously in contention, I think, are Hideto Asamura, the guy I've been tweeting out with any Hulk gif that I can find out there, and Stefan Romero, and they're both up there in OPS, and both of them are up there.
Asamura slacked off this past week, this past 10 days, and Romero caught up with him.
Yeah, he looked like the heat was getting to him a little bit, so we'll see how he recovers. But that Cebu Dome, man, it's hotter in there than it is in the real world.
And a guy who I think will be in the top three, well, I hope he'll be in the top three voting. I know better because he plays for the Oryx Buffaloes, but that's this Dynamo Masataka Yoshida. His team ain't going to win, so he ain't going to get any votes. But he's going to be certainly one of my favorite players.
Yeah, I like him too. But I think the guy who really is going to get passed over and is going to be really a shame, because I keep saying that every year at the end of the year, the guy has cleanup hitter numbers. He obviously drives the team, and he's better than you think. And that's Sho Nakata, and he's the home run leader right now at 17.
He's
got 57 RBIs to lead the way. And he also he's in the top 10 in hits with runners in scoring position and RBIs with runners in scoring position. Yeah.
Since Shohei Ohtani left, he's sort of like, because I'm the original Showtime dude.
But I mean, his batting average is not very high, and that's the problem. And his team is not doing very well. Yeah. That's the other problem. So he's really not going to get, I mean, he has his average up to 256 now, according to Yahoo. So, probably after tonight's games, but just really hasn't hit for average, but does everything. And you know, what is the thing that I always talk about for my MVPs? I want guys who help teams win with their production, and they're not winning, but when he does produce, they win games. So, and even when he doesn't produce, when they don't win the game, it seems like he's the guy who's producing anyway. So, I really like what he has done, and it's too bad. You talk about a guy getting overlooked because his team is going to is low. I think Nakata, with him leading in such categories like the big ones that the press looks at, the home runs and the RBIs, going to be a real tough pill to swallow for him to go. So let's move to the Central League now. I think there's a lot of debate in terms of what we can look at here, but who do you have? Who do you have leading the way? I think that's a tough question.
I think the leading the way is going to be Tomoyuki Sugano. He wouldn't be my MVP, but I think he's going to be the guy who is very likely to win it.
Huh. I mean, you know, they announced the top performers of the month for the first month, and we missed it. I thought it was going to be Okamoto because he had all the sexy numbers, but they went with Munetaka Murakami of the Swallows, and he's certainly performing at an MVP level. He's only 20, and I like what he's doing, but for me, no. I thought Okamoto was the guy, and I think he'll be the guy. He's leading the way in home runs. I can't see. I mean, 16. He didn't have a good series against the Dragons for some reason, but he's up there with the home runs, 42 RBIs. That's right behind Murakami. And again, he's hitting for average too. So
that's a tough call. You know, another guy who could do it is if the Bay Stars somehow win the league, a guy who could do it is Keita Sano.
Well, that's my guy. That's the guy I have leading the way, actually. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I want guys contributing to wins, and he is the biggest bat in that lineup, contributing every day to victories. No doubt. He's either scoring runs or knocking them in and leading the way in average 342, somehow out-hitting Seiya Suzuki, who's another candidate who, even if he's, you know, by their standards, the press here, their standards, not having the greatest production with the home runs and the RBIs, he's still up there in he's hit 339 in average, and he's the most consistent batter in that Carp lineup. So, and he's definitely the driving factor. Even though Shota Dobayashi is having a good season, I still think it's Seiya every day, all the time. So, yeah, this should be a fun watch as they go on. I don't think Keita Sano can win it unless they get to the.
Oh, I don't think that's going to happen either.
Answers, but let's say they do, but he doesn't hit enough home runs and only has a high average. Do you think that the Japanese press votes?
Well, the Japanese press would look fondly on him because of, you know, him being the captain and the cleanup hitter. You know, he gets extra credit for that, which is some degree, I think, favorable. But I think, it's going to be hard, but it's not impossible. Of course, here's the thing is he's still a relative newcomer.
Sure.
And I'm not one of these guys who say, well, he doesn't have a track record. You know, I remember one time it was a wonderful discussion between, you know, who's going to win the home, right? This is go way back 1996. Who's going to win the home run race? It's not going to be Yamasaki because he's never done any. It's not ever going to be Takeshi Yamasaki of the Dragons because he's never done anything. It'll be Yasuaki Taiho, or it'll be somebody else. It'll be Hiromitsu Ochiai or somebody who's done something before. I'm not one of those guys but it is a long season. He's never played every day for the full season.
Sure. And that's why we said early, yeah. We said early.
So it's early and people are going to make better adjustments to him. This is what happens when you're successful. People spend more time. And, you know, as you pointed out, people will make better adjustments. And I'm not saying he can't keep up, but it is going to be hard. In the Yamasaki case, it was simply a case of them dissing somebody who didn't have a track record without actually looking to see that the guy was the best home run hitter in the league, in the best home run park in the league.
Hey, it's what I always say, man. They don't know.
They don't. So stop listening to they and start listening to them. Hold on. Okay.
You mean us.
Yeah. Us, exactly. Us.
All right. Making a seamless transition, let's look at the early candidates for the top rookies. So this is always a difficult task because of the rules for rookies here. I mean, you can be a third-year player who hasn't played, you know, X number of games on the top team and still be considered a rookie. So you have to dig around and find out who those guys are who haven't been up there. And I didn't dig around. I just remembered from when we were doing our prediction shows and talk about the newcomers who I expected to be good, and I came up with two guys in each league. So who do you have in the Central League?
In the Central League, I got one guy in the Central League.
Yeah. At the moment, but yeah.
Yeah, Masato Morishita of the Hiroshima Carp.
Yeah, the pitcher.
And I liked I'm seeing dozens of guys who could be, you know, who have the quality in play in small sample sizes, but it's a here today, gone tomorrow, back to the farm team kind of thing. So one of the guys who I thought might be a candidate for Rookie of the Year, who I thought might make an impact, was Yasunobu Okugawa, the Swallows, but he's had an injury issue. It's like most of the news about him is he's playing catch again.
So, get out of here.
So, yeah, so we're going to be looking at him for maybe 2021 Rookie of the Year. So, yeah. No, my only guy right now is Masato Morishita. How about you?
Yeah, he's my top guy, obviously, 4-2, and he looks really good. And he has, you know, he pitched a shutout the other night, his first, obviously, and looked good doing it. And sure, all right. But there's another guy who probably doesn't have the fanfare and got some time last year in the playoffs with the Giants. And I was surprised, you know, as I think he was sent out there as a 19, maybe 18 year old. Mm-hmm. And that's Shohei Togo of the Yomiuri Giants. And you know, again, probably has not, he started out really strong in this season. Then he hit a rough patch, but he's still 5-2. So the five wins are pretty good. Not Hideaki Wakui style, but he's helping steady that rotation. And he is a big cog in that rotation. So I'm going to throw him in there, and I think he's going to do well.
And I think there's a dark horse, and I'm going to add him. And that is, and he's pitched all of two games.
Yeah.
And that's Yariel Rodriguez, because the Chunichi Dragons have applied and the Central League has accepted. Now, Japan has a rule, basically, if you're a foreign player, you're not allowed to win the Rookie of the Year unless you get an exemption. And and I don't want to go into all the details, because I've got working on a blog for this for the subscribers. But essentially, if you've played in the major leagues, you can't qualify. So even though if you're a hitter, for example, if you're a Japanese hitter, you know, if you're something if you've played professionally in America, you can't qualify typically. If you're a foreigner. But if you've played professionally as a Japanese, if you haven't been in the major leagues, you can. You know, like Tetsuya Yamaguchi with the Giants he played in A-ball, in a low A-ball in the States, in I think Butte, Montana, in parts of two seasons. And he was Rookie of the Year, so that's okay. But if you're Tony Barnett and you never played in the majors, you can come to Japan and they'll say, no, you were a professional overseas, so no. But the U.S. minors are considered, higher than Japan? But the Cuban National League isn't. Because Ariel Martinez and Yariel Rodriguez have been playing in Cuba for years. But they're eligible to be Rookies of the Year in Japan.
And so the Dragons.
Figure. There's a whole sort of, you know, a combination of insecurity and snobbery that's just amazing.
Hashtag
hi.
Well, we'll see if Yariel. I'm sorry, I have to wipe that one off. Snobbery. Yariel pitched. He has pitched against the Giants twice. Probably should have beaten him twice, but it's only one win, but no losses. He won that game.
Yeah, he's going to go through some ups and downs. He's pitched well against the Giants twice, won one game. He's 1-0, and he looks just the quality of his stuff is really good. So he needs, he's going to have to go through some adjustments when people catch up to what he's doing.
And he's going to have to do, he's got catch up to do. So.
Put some mustard on the fastball. So then you can.
All right. What about in the Pacific League?
In the Pacific League, I've got two, and they're both positioned. I liked the Fighters' number one pick, Yusei Kawano, at the start of the season.
Oh yeah, I was going to put him on my list.
I like his stuff, but he's just struggling with kind of nitpicky little things.
He's a rookie. Yeah,
he's a rookie. He's looking like a rookie. His pitching has been a constant battle of trusting his stuff in the zone because it's good. I mean, he doesn't have a high velocity, but he's the pitcher actually he reminds me of is Yudai Ohno. Because he's a three-quarter lefty who throws. He's got pretty good command, but he's just not confident enough to throw his stuff in the zone often enough and challenge people. He could be good, but right now the two guys I'm looking at are both position players.
Okay.
And they are shortstop Hiroto Kobukata of the Rakuten Eagles.
Yeah, that's a guy I have. Yeah.
Okay, and the other guy is now he's playing third base, and he's going to get a lot more playing time at third base for the time being, is Hisanori Yasuda, left-handed hitting third infielder for the Lotte Marines.
Yep, that's my guy as well. Great minds.
Yep. You heard that here first.
But yeah, Kobukata, I thought, I wasn't sure in the spring if he was going to hit enough. And because he was fast and he played the position really well.
Mm-hmm.
but he's hitting. So as long as he's doing that, I think he's going to be a rock solid force.
Yeah, my questions with him were a little bit about his defense.
Defense, mm-hmm.
And his arm. I hadn't really seen enough of his arm to get it to. I wasn't impressed enough by his arm as an amateur that I thought a lot of it. But there were, there are some guys. As I said, there's a bunch of guys. Oryx seems to have about a half dozen rookies that they're trying out. The Yakult Swallows seem to have and I've mentioned it before, but we're just not getting prolonged looks at these guys. But those two guys have certainly cemented their place. Yasuda, his batting average is not going to win. Is not going to win any awards, but he has. At least in the beginning when he started playing regularly, he was hitting, everything coming off his bat was hard and deep. This guy belonged.
All right, read it up there, Jim Allen.
Man, this guy belonged in a porn movie.
Read it up there, Jim Allen.
It was baseball porn. He was launching these shots, and it was impressive. But he slowed down a little bit. I think people are adjusting. But he's just got a quality swing. He was there. He was a high draft pick, I think, from 2018, and he's gonna. I hope he does well. He's an older guy. He's an older guy. He's not like Kobukata's fresh out of high school. So you gotta love that.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. We'll keep an eye on it. Let's make a one-seam transition and talk about very quickly the Nippon Ham Fighters manager Hideki Kuriyama on Saturday when Kohei Arihara just worked over the Lotte Marines in a 9-0 victory, earned his 600th victory as a manager. And, I really like the environment that the fighters have created under Kuriyama, and that's a whole lot of winning, a lot of competition, and you're going to produce or you're out, kind of an atmosphere. But I like it, and that's good for him personally to get that many wins. I think he's only now behind the all-time franchise leader in managerial wins, and that's Keiji Osawa.
Mm-hmm.
And good for him, and I'm happy for him. He made one comment in the Nikkan Sports Daily. Sports newspaper or whatever you want to call them. What are they called? Tabloids or
sports papers.
Sports paper. Okay. He says, hey, look, it's not me. If you do something for a long time, you obviously accumulate the numbers. So
that's the required statement of all managers on milestones. In fact, pretty much all players on milestones.
Of course. All right.
He's a favorite manager because he's different. He's famously gotten into feuds with his pitching coaches about different plans. Pitching coaches. He's famously gotten to a feud twice with pitching coach Masato Yoshi, who's quit the team twice over his policies. But he likes to do things. He's different. He likes to do things that are different, and that's a good thing. Sometimes I think he goes too much that way. And he likes novelties and fads and things, but he's a pretty old school guy. I do remember this when he was hired by the Nippon Ham Fighters with no coaching or managing experience. That the late great Wayne Grassick said, "This is not going to end well because guys with no experience don't do well." So that's not a dig at you, Wayne. I love you. We all love you, but people, even Wayne's wrong sometimes.
And that's, that's the nature of the game.
It is indeed.
All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, this is MP3 from Gabe in Toronto.
Hello again, John and Jim. I've got a bit of an esoteric question this time, around jersey numbers specifically. I've noticed in watching NPB games last year that a lot of players seem to wear single zero and double zero. I did a little bit of research, and in Major League Baseball, in their entire history, there have only been 41 players who have worn zero or double zero at the Major League level. This season's NPB rosters alone have 19 who wear single or double zero. So my question is, why are zero and double zero so much more popular in NPB than elsewhere? Or if there is a specific reason anyway. Thanks again.
Cool. All right. Well, geez, numbers. You know, I actually don't pay much attention to jersey numbers anymore. I used to as a young person, and then I had a sports information job a long time ago, and it was crazy with guys wanting to change their numbers and all that stuff. And I'm like, no, man, the number doesn't matter. It's what's in the uniform. So I started thinking that way a long time ago, and I don't really pay attention to the numbers.
I thought it was
so much.
Because you have every number known to man hanging in your closet.
All right, you.
John's one of these guys. You can say, hi, my name's John Gibson. And they'll say, what size jersey do you want? I'm joking, but it seems like that.
All right. Well, so to answer the question, Jim, I was thinking, and the only thing I could come up with is the fact that when in Japan, when you're registered, when you get a regular contract with the team, the entire organization is numbered from the farm team up to the top team, so that when you get called up, they don't have to issue you. I don't know why. I mean, I was thinking this was in my head. I don't know if this is true, but they don't have to issue you a number and you have to go through another thing with the jersey. You just bring your jersey and get in your uniform
exactly.
And get in the game. And so it just makes everything easy. So you need the numbers. You need the zeros and the other numbers. And because if you don't have a regular contract, you get a 3-digit number, which we've heard about guys talking about on the show, it's particularly the past 2 years, then you have to get a number issued. But if you're not going to stick around, if they don't think you're going to stick around, they don't bother issuing you a number, so that you're taking a number from a guy who wants one. What's your...
No, it's the same, Ron, is that, you know, there's 99 digits, and then there's 0 and double 0, but you've got up to 70 guys on the organizational roster. You've got, I think, 7 first team coaches, another 7. So you've got 84 numbers that are taken up, and some teams have retired numbers.
Ooh, I didn't think about the coaches.
Yeah, so that's basically, there's very little leeway for other numbers. You know, if you're the Giants and you've got half a dozen numbers, basically, and you may be asking yourself, why haven't the Giants retired number 55, you know, from Hideki Matsui? And the answer is, what are we going to do with any more retire? You know, we have more room at Tokyo Dome than we have to hang the banners than we do to have. We can't give away the numbers.
Right, right. Yeah.
So
I'm thinking, you know, when we're sitting here talking about it, I'm thinking, we need all these numbers, man. You can't retire. I was thinking the Dragons had not retired the number 13, which some guy is wearing this year, one of their rookies. And I'm like, what? That doesn't even make sense. That number should have been retired before Itoki Iwase retired himself.
Mm.
So, yeah. They just need him, I guess.
Yep.
I hadn't really thought about it, but I'm impressed, Gabe, that you did the research and checked out and counted 19, because I didn't have time to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I think in the major leagues, you know, they really only need about 50 numbers, and that they're good.
Yeah. So all those zeros, a whole lot of nothing. Going on in MPB. All right. Thank you very much for listening, guys.
Yes.
If you want to send in a question, just like Gabe did, as an MP3, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at JBWPodcast with the hashtag High Heat, or give us a note on the Facebook page. It's nice and warm, but it's going to start to cool off here soon.
You optimist.
So, the home runs are going to slow down maybe. Ha, ha, ha. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at jballallen.com.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBWPodcast and at JBallAllen. Be sure to send in your questions with hashtag High Heat, and you'll hear from us again next week.